The WBAI Community Advisory Board will be holding a special meeting on Sunday, November 2nd, starting at 2 p.m. at the Wall Street Atrium at 60 Wall Street in Lower Manhattan. This is a CAB town hall meeting designed to have as many people as possible come and voice their opinions and concerns regarding the current state of WBAI and Pacifica Radio. Again, there will be a special town hall meeting for the WBAI community held on Sunday, November 2nd at the Wall Street Atrium at 60 Wall Street in Lower Manhattan. All are invited and welcome to come.
My fellow Americans.
Just 2 hours ago, Allied Air Forces began an attack on military targets in Iraq and Kuwait. These attacks continue as I speak.
Their mission is to attack Iraq's nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons programs and its military capacity to threaten its neighbors. Their purpose is to protect the national interests of the United States and indeed the interests of people throughout the Middle East and around the world.
I want Americans and all the world to know that coalition forces will make every effort to spare innocent civilians from harm. And helping Iraqis achieve a united, stable, and free country will require our sustained commitment.
I want to explain why I have decided, with the unanimous recommendation of my national security team, to use force in Iraq, why we have acted now, and what we aim to accomplish.
As Commander-in-Chief, my highest priority is the security of the American people.
We will defend our freedom. We will bring freedom to others. And we will prevail. May God bless our country and all who defend it.
WBAI, speaking truth to power for over 50 years. WBAI, your community alternative.
All righty then, as we say here on WBAI New York 99.5 FM, also streaming on the air on the web at WBAI.org. It's now 7 o'clock, so we don't have Off the Hook for you, but we have something just as good. We have the Personal Computer Show here today, 1 hour early for a 2 hour show. And I failed to mention that today was Wednesday, the October the 29th, 2014. And we've got Joe and we got Hank, and let's do this.
Hello, world. This is Hank Key, and I'm in the studio with Stevie DB. And this is the time that's normally on for the Off the Hook people. But, you know, we've been on the air with them like a tag team twins for over 25 years. We've been on the air over 31 years. And they had 2 hours last week. We have 2 hours this week. It's all like a tag team special. So welcome. Welcome to the Personal Computer Show, or those who are listening to the Personal Computer Show, as well as those who normally listen to Off the Hook. We're going to do something a little different in this format. We have 2 hours, and in the 2 hours, we have two. We're splitting each hour into a half hour, so we have four half-hour slots where we're going to be talking about. We do have a discussion, and we do have news, and then we're going to spend the other half of the time. Well, we're going to try to get you to help the station. We really need to. Now, joining me this evening is Joe King. Joe, are you there?
I am indeed. Stevie got me on. And I tried to tell him that I'm not due on for another hour, and he was arguing with me, but I guess he was right.
Okay, finish the tequila 2 hours from now. Don't try to finish it now.
No, I'm sipping on it slowly. I've figured it out that I'll get to the worm just at the end of the show.
Well, what we're going to do is we're going to start off this by half hour where we're going to be talking about, something that's important, relevant to everyone. And towards the end of the half hour, we're going to do a little pitching and we're going to let you know what the premiums are. But if you want to just donate money and just find out how you can donate, it's 212-209-2950. So the key number is 212-209-2950. And if you happen to be out of town and you don't have one of those three plays or four plays or whatever you want to call it, you can go to WBAI.org to make a donation. Joe, there was something.
The only thing I'd like to add, Hank, is because we are in a membership drive mode, fundraising, membership drive, all of that, we will not be taking live phone calls on the air, which we normally do. And that's really one of the reasons why the folks should want to donate, because we do take live questions on the air, and we do try and help the folks who call in. And if they want to make sure that, you know, we stay there and that the folks from Off the Hook stay there, why, they should call in. Hank will tell you later on about some of the gifts we've developed to give to you, but that's for later.
Hey, Joe, you had emailed me something that that was just released, maybe yesterday or today, and you felt it was pretty urgent about the Verizon they're starting a new business, and you have some second thoughts about that.
Well, Verizon, I don't have the name of it right in front of me, Hank. Perhaps you do, but Verizon has come up with a concept of a new magazine format.
Sugarstring.com.
Sugarstream.com.
No, string, like S-T-R-I-N-G.
And what it is really is another technical website with full of technical information. And they've been soliciting out for people that I know have been getting emails asking whether or not for pay, for salary, not salary, but for a fee, whether they would like to come on board and be reporters and columnists for this new site. And then they said, but of course we do have a few minor rules and regulations.
Minor? Are you kidding me? Minor? If we had that at WBAI, we wouldn't be here.
Well, let me tell the folks about some of these minor rules and regulations. They can't talk about the United States spying. They can't talk about the NSA spying on citizens of the United States here domestically. They can't do that. Oh, they can't talk about anything having to do with a free and open Internet, the so-called Internet neutrality. No, they've already made up their mind about that. They don't want any articles or discussions or reportage on that subject. And there's a few other minor little things like that, Hank. And by golly, they were really surprised that some people objected to it.
Well, you know, the reason why Off the Hook and the Personal Computer Show have lasted all this while is because we do have an open-air broadcast, and we could disagree with the government, we could disagree with corporations.
Oh, we even disagree with each other.
Yes, we do.
Frequently.
Hey, David, how are you? I'm glad that you're here.
I was waiting for you to introduce
me.
I
know. I didn't realize you were on because Stevie said you might not be available.
No, I said he was on.
Well, let me just give a short intro. We also have from the West Coast, we have David Perry, and we have this format that we're going to try for 2 hours and see how it goes.
We're not trying. We're going to do it.
Okay.
You know what I was going to point out about Sugar String is that we are on one of the few radio stations in the world where we can get away with saying exactly what we feel in all ways. I do a lot of media. I've appeared on a lot of other radio shows about technology and television shows all over the world, and everywhere else there is editing such as you suggested is happening with the Verizon.
There is one exception to that, David. I find that when I watch cable TV and sometimes on radio, there's 7 words they can use, but WBAI can't use those 7 words, and we can't even mention what those 7 words are.
Yeah, but see, Verizon doesn't want you to talk about net neutrality because they don't want net neutrality. They're the enemy of net neutrality.
Actually, they are one of the biggest purveyors of the anti-net neutrality message. Their lobbyists are down at the FTC and at the FCC and the FFC. Don't ask me about that. It's one of the 7 words. They are lobbying consistently against net neutrality for a very simple reason.
Money.
That's the simple reason. Follow the money.
Hey, you know, one of the things...
You know what? Somebody actually... Can I jump in just for a second? The somebody was saying, well, we pay more money for faster Internet speed. I says, yes, that's to for as a user. But when net neutrality goes, you'll have to pay for every dime of bandwidth as a provider.
Well,
so if you don't have enough money to pay to be a provider, other providers who can pay more money, their message will get there before yours does.
Before we got on the air, I had been talking to Joe, and I said, you know, that's an old story because it's known. And Joe says, no, just because we talked about it, there are people that are just learning about it. And that's the fact that the AT&T, they talk about unlimited usage, but they have a cap as a fine print. Joe, you want to go over that?
Well, unlimited to me means there is no limit, period. It's very simple. It's a black and white. It's binary. It's either unlimited or it's not unlimited. AT&T doesn't agree. They're saying it's unlimited, but they have the right to determine at what speed it's unlimited at any given time.
Oh, no, no, no. In other words, they change the speed, but you still have access, even though the speed is lower. They throttle it.
Well, the speed might be so much lower, Hank, that you cannot watch a movie, you cannot listen to a song, and you can't even read a book because the page won't turn fast enough.
No, we're not on those days anymore. Everything is high speed now.
Are you kidding?
No, but see, as a
The thing is, Stevie and David, it turns out that it's an old bait-and-switch story. They tell you, in order to get you to sign up, that it's unlimited, and then they throttle you back after you've used a certain amount of data. Now, the question becomes, how much data?
And will they do it, actually?
And no, that's not the question. The question is, how much data? Because they will not tell you in advance how much data, but everybody who's got an unlimited plan at a given number of gigabytes per month has been throttled back to dial-up speed. Is it still unlimited? Maybe. If you're from AT&T, you would say it's still unlimited. However, for the very first time in my life, the FCC has decided, hey, we're going to stand up and protect the consumer. And we're going to say, not only is that not unlimited, we're going to sue AT&T for a full refund in the courts for millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah, you were telling me that there are 6,000 complaints filed with the FCC?
Something like that.
Well, that's quite a number.
But it's estimated that the number of people affected by this double-dealing deal that the AT&T people have come up with is many, 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 many times that 6,000.
Well,
we'll see how it all turns out.
Yeah, you know what it is? The whole thing depends on reading the fine print.
No, it doesn't depend on reading the fine print, because unfortunately, in this case, the fine print did not mention the throttling back of all speed.
Well,
the other thing that it didn't mention is that it was just good business on their part, because the more they throttled it, the more bandwidth they had to sell to somebody else. So, you know.
Well, we'll see. Hey, Joe, you know, talking about reading the fine print, one of the things that I've been getting in the in my email is joining crowd sourcing or Kickstarter or some variations of it, because I can get in on the ground floor of a new product and... Hey.
But not as an investor. That
right.
is not ever an
investor. Wait a minute. It goes deeper than that, right, Joe? Because sometimes the product is not even real.
Well, it's more than it's not real. I mean, what David just said is not clear to everybody.
It's a donation.
As a matter of fact, it wasn't clear to me.
In other words, it's like the guy who's playing the drums at Central Park, and he's got his hat there, and you're just donating to him.
They are
yes,
investors.
Exactly. Precisely.
Yeah, Hank is making fun at me.
It's
no,
okay.
But that's precisely what it is, Hank. They are not. This is not. You are not entering into a security arrangement with these people.
No,
this
no,
is
no,
off.
No, it's more than that. It's more than
Hank,
that.
Hank points out that I have a bad habit, and he does too. And I'm not sure about you, David, but most of us really don't read the fine print. We do what we think is the right thing, but we don't read the fine print. I remember many, many, many years ago, maybe 30 years ago, I was down at Hank's laboratory talking about a brand new product. It was a relational database product. And Hank was saying, well, if you do such and such, it doesn't work. And I said to him, but I did it last night. He said, well, how'd you know to do that? I showed him a trick. I said, well, it's right there in the manual. He said, well, if they expect me to read the manual, I mean, for heaven's sake.
Well, that's when Joe taught me the acronym, what RTFM stands for.
RTFM.
Yeah. Well,
the fine manual.
Many people who crowdsource things out here in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And from the very beginning, my understanding of it has been that it is running like public radio, where you want to produce something and regular backing won't let you produce it, so you pass the hat. Now, usually they give out a premium.
But David,
David, wait a second.
What happens, though, as happening in many, many cases today, that you pass the hat and somebody gets enough money together from donations from you and me to build a prototype, and then he sells the prototype seven figures, eight figures, nine figures. One of them was sold last month or 2 months ago for over $2 billion.
Yes.
Don't you think that the people who financed it are entitled to a little bit of that?
No.
Exactly correct. They are not.
They are entitled to none of it. That's the way that is run. That is the nature of that beast.
Well, what happened was that Kickstarter had suspended a crowdfunding campaign for a wireless router, and they had raised already $600,000.
Wow.
And people were looking at it carefully. It turned out it was a bogus product. And if they
it was not a bogus product.
Well, it was not their product to begin with.
What they did was they bought some off-the-shelf Chinese hardware, and they bought some off-the-shelf somebody else's software, and they bought from off-the-shelf somebody else's chip, and they married the three together. And that product, which incidentally had already been developed by somebody else similarly, was selling around the marketplace, I'm making up a number now, for $50.
It was really like what they were offering the people who were kicking in money.
And they were selling it for $65 so that they could take an extra spread in there. Now, I don't know that particular deal, whether or not Kickstarter let it go through before it was suspended. With some of these crowdsourced products, the money is not collected or it's held in escrow until the budget is actually met. In other words, if they're trying to raise $50,000 and they only raise $10,000, then the deal dies and you don't kick in the money you promised. I don't know with this $600,000 whether or not the money actually transferred hands. Do you know?
No, I don't know. That's a problem, is that they have a target goal, okay? If they meet the target goal, is the money released to them? If you don't release the money to them, they can't go forward. But yet, if you release the money to them, what guarantee you have that it's ever going to be offered?
Well, None whatsoever.
So if you get solicitation in the email about crowdsourcing, crowdfunding, Kickstarter, a great product, get it at a discount, be the early bird for it, just remember, you don't have equity in it. You don't, in other words, no matter how much you put in.
But you know that going
the
in.
The two organizations that I've looked at that work in this crowdsourcing area both have a set of, not guidelines, but actually of hard and fast rules that you have to promise to adhere to in order to use the service.
But the thing is, they have to release the money for them to move forward.
They only release the money if the total budget is met. In other words, if you go into it saying, I need
a million. Let's say I need a million.
Dollars in
order to you see, okay, there's a problem with this. There's a problem here. The problem is that this originally was envisioned to be very, 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 very low-cost funding for really small projects.
Right.
I want to buy an ice cream truck. Can I have $10 each from 1,000 people so I can do that?
But now they're talking in the millions now.
Right. Well, that's the nature of modern-day casino American capitalism, is everything has to be bigger, 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 more, more, more. And so we get this, but this is what's wrong with doing this with it. This was supposed to take the place of asking your uncle to fund you to set up you and your wife with a hot dog cart.
Free
or
money.
To buy your cab medallion or whatever you needed to do to start your tiny little business.
I'm glad you mentioned it that way. I'm glad you used that experience, because back in the day, one of my uncles did have a cab. And back in the day, he didn't have the money to buy the cab, so he went to everybody in the family who lent him $100. And with his $2,300, he got his medallion. That medallion today is, if he had it,
like
if he
was alive,
he's not, would be worth close to $1 million. And if somebody, if you, for example, wanted to go out and get a cab, if you went to each of your relatives, but this time you'd have to ask each of them for $10,000 or $100,000 to get your medallion, things have gotten out of hand. We're dealing with monopoly money, not real money.
Well, for the people who are kicking in the money in the Kickstart, that's real money. It's not, you know.
But Hank, nobody ever claimed that they were getting an equity share in anything.
That's right. It's donations.
Let me put it this way. For those who are getting solicitations, let them be forewarned.
I think donations are good.
Yes, this is not a equity. I have a friend who designs decks of playing cards, and he sends out an email to everyone in the magician community saying, I've designed this new deck of playing cards, and he gets $4,000 or $5,000, and that's enough to run 1,000 decks of playing cards, you know, because you have to do a press setup and all of that thing. And it's so expensive to do this nowadays that he goes out, he crowdsources, and he ends up with a couple of thousand leftover decks of playing cards. And then he takes those and he can resell those over the years to, you know, to continue having revenue stream after he's done the crowdsourcing.
And he gets a revenue stream.
He's typical.
A revenue stream. But what about the people like you who kicked in the $100?
We get a deck of signed playing cards by the designer.
And for you, that's a good deal. You're happy to do that because it's something you collect or something that you do.
Yeah, you want it because you want to see this guy print his unique printing design playing card.
Suppose you got an email from a friend whose friend's sister's brother-in-law's friend told him about this great deal for a new deck of playing cards, and if you want to get in on the ground floor, here's what you have to do. And he doesn't realize that there is no equity position. There's no payback. It's just the joy of donating.
Right.
Well, talking
that's
about
what you have to be careful about.
Hey, guys.
The Romans right had a front. Saying about this. They said caveat emptor.
No. It's the whole thing with charity. I just got an email from somebody telling me that before I give to charity this year, I should take a look at these facts and figures and how bad each of them is, the Red Cross, the Goodwill,
it was me who sent you the salaries of these guys.
I was leaving your name out of it.
It's okay.
I did some research. I did some research on it, and I found out that every single fact and figure in that piece of email was wrong. It was either misstated, out of date, or an outright lie. And it just annoyed me that these kind of chain mails go around when there are legitimate things that should be talked about instead of making up numbers in order to, I don't know what the purpose of it was, to push a few charities, which incidentally showed up much worse in the facts than they did in this chain mail. Anytime you see something that looks on the internet that it's either too good to be true or too bad to be true, trust me, it's
well, Joe,
not true.
Joe, let me interrupt both of you to say that this is something that is true, something where crowdsourcing, crowdfunding would help. That's called WBAI.
I like donations.
I'm sorry that you...
Right. And by the way, when you donate money to WBAI, you don't own a piece of WBAI.
Nope, you don't. There's
not only yes, don't you, do. David, but I think if you knew about the way it was operating, you wouldn't want to own a piece of
WBAI is not a business, as we all know.
Come on,
as
Joe.
Everyone who's listening to us knows.
Joe,
I have friends who don't get it. They go, well, you guys are going to just go out of business. I said, if we were in business, we could go out of business. But we're not in business.
Exactly right. You see, you don't donate to BAI to make a profit. You don't donate to BAI. You don't even donate to BAI to feel good. You donate to BAI because you believe in the fact that freedom of the press is important, that it is important. Not only freedom of the press, you should have the right, if you're a producer, to get your message out there without somebody looking over your shoulder and saying, well, there's no profit to be made in that. I'm not interested in it. As a matter of fact, there's nobody at BAI in the management's position, in a programming position, who tells you, you can't say that because it's not true. If whatever you say is okay with BAI, as long as you don't violate the law.
Well, Joe, let me just say that one of the biggest premium, the best premium that any one who's listening to us can get is the content that we give them. In other words, you know, we were talking and scratching our head about, well, what are we talking about, a premium? Well, we do have premiums, physical premiums, but one of the greatest premiums is the weekly, hopefully weekly, content that we give you about what's happening in the industry, what our chief gripe is. We also give tips. We give reviews. I know that sometimes we hit on a nerve where people would just, you know, like, wow, that's a great topic you covered. I've been waiting for that, and I just learned something. In fact, one of the things that we hope to cover tonight is, like, you know, sometimes, you know, we take it for granted when we talk about some technical issue that everyone understands us. And Joe and Dave, one of the things that one of the listeners wrote to us about is, You seem to talk about portable applications, portable apps. And then it dawned on me, we never talked about the pros and cons of portable apps. And that's one of the things that, you know, then I said, well, I know what the differences are. And I looked it up. And there's very little is written up about what are the advantages of what a portable app is. So
I've never used the phrase portable app. That's the first time I've ever mentioned that in my life.
David, I know for a fact you use portable apps because right before you joined this company you're now with, I asked you for some antivirus software, and you reached into your pocket and said, I just happened to have these cards with me, and you handed them to me. And so those were portable. You were carrying them.
No, but that doesn't make them a portable app.
No.
Those were login codes that got you
how did I get them? You walked into a store and bought it.
That is not what portable app is, Joe.
You didn't mail them to me. You carried them. That makes them portable.
So no, Joe. We're going to go over it. But let me, look, please, we really, this is supposed to be the final week of fundraising, and
I betcha.
Ever?
You know what? We're really hard pressed to stay alive right now. We're making it. We've been talking.
Do you remember the story of Peter and the Wolf?
Yeah, when you cry wolf too many times, but you know, somehow, you know, it's nipping at my tail, and part of my tail is missing. Okay.
Well, you had a big tail.
That's the way to mix a metaphor.
Yeah. So
I never met a four I didn't like.
Oh,
a couple of threes, maybe a five.
Listen, there's one thing I want to tell you about Peter and the Wolf. The station may have told you, the listening audience, 8,000 times over the last 15 years that it was going down, and it was going down badly and painfully. And each time you people out there who are listening now came through and you found a way of helping, you reached deep into your pockets, you said, well, maybe I won't buy that cup of coffee tomorrow. I'll send them $5. And then it got to the point of you saying, well, maybe I won't buy the forever stamp for 47 cents. I'll send a postcard instead of a letter. And now we're asking you not to buy that TCP. Do they still sell TCPs in the stores? 2 cents plain.
I thought you were talking about PCP, and I thought, angel dust?
No.
We can talk about angel dust on the air.
When I was a little kid, you went into the corner candy store, and you had your 2 cents, and you asked for a TCP, and they gave you a little 6-ounce glass of seltzer water.
Joe, I'm not your age.
That must
Very
be a New York thing.
Very few people are, unfortunately. they're all
back
going.
Back there under Mayor LaGuardia, is that what you're telling us?
Mayor LaGuardia was one of my favorite mayors because on Sunday mornings he would read me the comic strips because the papers were on strike.
But he didn't have a computer.
Nobody did.
Exactly. And by the way, Joe, I do remember that.
Ada Lovelace might have had a computer.
I do remember those days.
Well, I'll tell you, tell the folks out there that instead of a TCP, they can send in their virtual 2 cents to BAI. And you've heard the expression, putting in your 2 cents worth? Well, we're asking all of you to put in your 2 cents.
Yeah, what we're saying is, look, I'm going to go through the other premiums, but really the best premium is when Off the Hook is on, when the Personal Computer Show is on. And we really, each week, we dig deep, and it's not just the surface of what the headlines are. We go beyond that, and we try to give two sides of it. You know, I was having a discussion with one of my colleagues here at the station. He says,
"You have colleagues?"
Yeah, well, let's say, well, he's no longer around now, but I remember talking to him, and I won't tell you who it is, all right? He says, "I always tell the truth." And I said, "Yes, but you only tell the half of the truth. How about the other half?" He says, "Well, I do tell the truth." You know what? If you don't tell the whole truth or both sides of it or all aspects of it, you're not telling the truth.
I haven't been on a jury trial in a long time, but isn't that part of the rap? Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yeah.
So help you guard?
Well, God.
Now, in logic, Joe, that would be what you refer to as a false dilemma. Each possible outcome of an argument is a lemma. And dilemma means there's two lemmas. So a false dilemma is where you narrow something down to where there's only two possible outcomes, when in reality there are 6 or 45 or 9 million outcomes.
Well, let me just say that we have the...
David, excuse me, Hank. I was listening very carefully. I've been on this station for, what is it, Hank, 32 years now?
going on 32 years.
I've been on other stations. I've been on magazines and book publishing boards. I've been in college classrooms and high school classrooms. I've taught some. It's the first time anybody has ever given me a rational explanation of the word dilemma. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for that.
And if you're a young college student, I would like to recommend that you take a class in formal symbolic logic or rhetoric in the philosophy department of the university you are attending.
Oh, well, as a matter of fact, I did, okay. David, and I learned one very interesting fact that I will pass on to you right now.
Is it right? About computers?
Sinon was a Greek. Sinon was a liar. All Greeks are liars.
Listen, oh, that is not
212-209-2950. We do have, for $50 premium, the Windows XP support DVD. The XP support is we have all those post-SP3 patches, the unofficial beta patches through the end of August. We have all the other service packs that comes with the XP. So for $50... a donation to the station, we have that Windows XP support, and you have to go find it. And if you can't find it, and even if you do find it, it takes a long time to download. We also happen to have the Windows 7 support, and the reason why that is also available is because on it is something that's no longer available online from Microsoft. That is XPM, because they discontinue XP. They also discontinue the free copy of the virtual copy of the XP operating system that runs under Windows 7 and all the other support that goes with it, such as if you don't have the hardware virtualization, they give you the software so that you can run it. If you don't, so they have all that. So we have the Windows XP support DVD for $50. We have the Windows 7 support that has the XPM for $50. Now, if you like both of them, we can squeeze it all into one big DVD. It's called a Windows 2-for-1 support for $75. So call 212-209-2950. And, of course, the fourth support that we've been talking about, or support, is the content that we give you. And how much does that cost? Whatever your love is for the station, whatever you feel that you can contribute on behalf of the personal computer show so that we can continue to give you these weekly tips, updates, and some of the hyperboles that Joe goes into and some of the hyperboles that David goes into. And I'm in.
You remember Peter Bergman passed away about this time last year, Peter Bergman from the Firesign Theater? And over the course of the year, I had a chance to get from the Pacifica Archives the entirety of their radio show, which is close to 900 hours of their radio show out in Los Angeles in the 60s and 70s. And I was listening to it, and they were on KPFK at the time, and every fundraiser that ever came up, Pacifica Radio was on the verge of going blind. You know, it was going to go out of business right this second.
Out of business?
And, yes?
Well, the thing is, we're not just talking it now.
Oh, I'm not saying this is not true. I'm saying this is our constant reality.
No.
We are not tied to the commercial world.
Yeah, but there's a big difference now, David, because with WBAI today, we are, we laid off 3/4 of the staff. The staff is so thin that it's bare bones that we need maintenance. And very often when people call in on the telephone, we have a hard time because you got to maintain equipment, and if you have no one maintaining equipment, you're going to have a poor broadcasting sound, or you can't even get through at all. Like just tonight itself, Stevie heard the phone ring, and he's looking all over. Where's the phone ringing?
I know.
And he kept looking, and the phone kept ringing. And I'm looking at him. Where's the phone? You know,
right?
And he can't find it because
no phone is.
Because
I don't know what
it's ringing somewhere, but we don't know because we're running with a skeleton crew. And when I say skeleton crew, I really mean it. Because typically, most stations, you have an audio engineer. Now, Stevie is our audio engineer for over 10 years.
Over 20 years.
And you know what?
In a row.
And you know what? Stevie does this free. Not only does he do it free, but he travels in every week. It costs him to come in from the island.
From Long Island.
Let me ask you a question. Isn't it appropriate that it would be a skeleton crew? I mean, it's Halloween this week.
Yeah.
Oh, you stole my joke.
I go for vampire crew.
I, you know, zombie. I, you know, the crew. Thing was, I said it on purpose. I was going to see how many people got it. This is WBAI-FM 99.5 New York, and please, 212-209-2950. Hey, you know, one of the things that while we have David with us, because I don't know how long he can stay with us, is Apple is they have an encryption program that the FBI wants Apple to make accessible to them, and they've gone to Congress, and Congress says no. Comments, Joe?
Yeah, I have a quick comment, Hank. You misunderstood it a little bit.
Okay.
Apple's always had that encryption availability.
I know that, but the FBI says,
Android. What Apple is doing and what Google is doing and what some of the others are doing is they're making the default into the encryption program. They are not keeping any access to the public key or the private key, and so that if the FBI or your mother-in-law wants the code for your encryption, they can't give it. The only way it can be given is if a court order comes to you, because you're the only one who has the code. And the FBI is saying, hey, that's not good. We need to have a back door because, you know, we're supposed to prevent crime. And I say, well, then why don't they also say it's against the law to lock your house?
I don't think anyone is saying it's against the law to lock your house.
No, they're not. Why not? It's the same thing as locking your data.
Well, you know, it's one of the things
Let me say something, Hank. Everybody that I know, both the radical right, the radical left, and the middle of the roaders, are all saying, we have this wonderful Constitution. It's a great Constitution, except one guy doesn't want the Second Amendment, somebody doesn't want the First Amendment. In this case, they don't want the Sixth Amendment, which is unlawful search and seizure. Hey,
well,
why have any of the Bill of Rights? We can get rid of them all.
Joe, the headline...
I'm going to go for another Latin quote, quis custodiet ipsos custodis, which means who watches the watchman.
Was it 1941 or 1942 in Madison Square Garden, there was a great convention of people, and Zora Mostel got up on the stage. He had been pretty well excoriated for some of his...
Wait. 1941?
1942?
No, not Zora Mostel. Now, come on.
1942?
I think you got the wrong year, Joe. Zora Mostel, not true at all. Not in 41.
I'll look up the date. But the song that he sang was, who's going to investigate the man who investigates the man who investigates me?
Well, by the way, I just want to stay with the Apple story for a moment, is that the FBI went to Congress asking for legislation, and fortunately, Congress said no. That's good. Now, Joe, I don't mean to, you know, it seems like whenever we talk about something, we're always beating up on someone.
Yes, but, absolutely.
But there's another Verizon story about them having cookies?
They weren't cookies. No.
Well, they don't call it cookies, but it's cookie-like.
No, it's not cookie-like at all.
Okay, go ahead.
Cookie is something that is put onto your machine.
Okay, they call this identifiers, all right?
A cookie is something that is put onto your machine to tell somebody else where you've been or what you did or what you said or what have you.
Markers.
What Verizon did was they gave each user a unique user identifier, and they kept on their machine a record of every place you went and everything you did. That's called snooping. They then said to marketers, if you pay us enough money, we'll tell you where Joe King went and what he did and what he said, and then you can set up your advertising to attack that. Or maybe you can use that information to blackmail him, or maybe you can use that information to break into his home when he goes on vacation. We don't really care what you use that information for, as long as you pay us enough money.
But Verizon's not the only one doing that.
Who else was? I have proof that Verizon
does. Facebook?
Who?
Google?
I was going to say
Microsoft.
Google does it.
No, Microsoft can't do it. Google can do it only insofar as a limitation goes. But what Verizon was doing was they were using their unique position as an ISP.
Well, now, wait a minute. You don't think Google has a doesn't have a unique position?
No. The only way Google can do it is if you have a Google account and you then use the Google software to do it. Verizon can do it as soon as you turn on your computer because they are your ISP. They have
Google knows who you are. Google knows who you are.
How, Dave?
At any rate,
they know.
Here's the point.
Take my word for it. They know.
Here's the point. There is a way, if you drill down enough in your Verizon account, to turn this off. The unique identifier you cannot turn off, but the fact that it trails you, you can turn off. The fact that they can sell that information, you can turn off. Now, that in itself is good, but it's also bad when you find out, and you'll only find out by reading very carefully some newspapers that have reporters who've done the research, that they can indeed be turned off from selling the information. But they cannot be turned off from using that unique identifier to continue tracking you. Now, we know one thing from Mr. Snowden's release of information about the NSA, that there's a thing called a National Defense Letter. And if a ISP like Verizon gets it, they have to turn over whatever information is requested in that letter, and they, by law, cannot tell you that that information has been turned over. It now starts getting more and more complicated and more nasty and asking you more and more for complete faith. After all, it's your government. They're not going to do anything bad, are they? There's not going to be any plumbers, are there? There's not going to be any reason, is there? I'm sorry.
Past that. I think there's much worse things to worry about than that. The fact that they're okay. The fact that these all of these brokers of data are demonstrably incapable of securing their own borders makes it clear that the fact that they're collecting such a dossier on you, and that's how it's referred to as a dossier, that they collect a dossier on you that whoever wants to steal it from them can just walk out it because nobody's minding the door.
Oh, there are people minding the doors. That's why the people collecting the dossiers are coming in through the windows.
Oh, you hear about people, you hear about, 600 million credit card numbers being stolen, that sort of thing. Obviously, nobody's guarding anything well enough.
Well, let me ask.
I just heard a joke the other day that when the NSA finishes that big data center in Utah, that all they need to do is put in shopping carts and cash registers. It's going to be one-stop shopping for hackers to rebrokerage that information to whomever.
Let me ask both of you this, okay? All right, you complain. What can you do about it?
There's
nothing.
Two things you can do. You can listen to people like David who say nothing. David, is that what you were going to say?
I actually said nothing, but I didn't mean you can do nothing. You can start by being aware that this is going on. You can start by being aware that everything that you put online day before yesterday, Mr. Snowden came out and said, do not use any U.S.-based data services at all.
Let me ask you two questions.
Yeah.
Have you anonymized your Google account?
I don't have a Google account.
Hank, have you anonymized your Google account?
I was going to start that, and I find out that NSA targets people who anonymizes with Tor.
I don't think either of you know what I'm saying or what I'm asking, because Google has assigned a unique identifier to you so that every time you search, that identifier gets updated.
And I'm telling you, I can't prove this to you, but I'm going to just say it one more time. You don't need to open up an account with them to be tracking
you. But if you use a Google search engine or a Gmail...
Yeah.
Or a YouTube or anything, there is a cookie on your hard drive that identifies you to Google.
Yeah, and there's things beyond cookies.
And that cookie is updated every time you use any Google service. But if you Google it, you'll find a way of anonymizing it so that every time you log off any Google service, it's set back to zero. Very simple thing. You don't have to be a hacker to do it.
You
very
can delete
simple.
Your cookies at any time. But like Dave said, it's more to it than
that. You heard me talk about Verizon assigning a unique identifier, and I said you can't keep Verizon from saving that information, but you can keep them legally from selling it. Have either of you gone into your Verizon account and arranged to do that? And the reason I'm asking the question is not to embarrass you. It requires a little bit of work, and most end users, do not do that little bit of work. Most end users don't even know it's there. Those who know it's there say, well, what's going to happen?
It's right
well,
there. Just
ask
click
the people
it.
At Watergate what's going to happen.
It's just a click. You click it that they will not sell your item when you're on your own page at Verizon.
Sure, they'll never sell it.
Right.
Well, you know, I do something a little different. Every time I go onto the World Wide Web, I use a Linux distro to do it. And it, I just reboot, each, you know, each time
that,
to go
that
in.
Does, that's wonderful as far as the cookie on your hard drive goes.
It never goes on the hard drive.
And that's also wonderful as far as the Google identifier. That does you nothing as far as the Verizon identifier.
Right, because of the...
That's kept on their server.
You know, the only thing is that, that's one of the things I always wondered about is because it used to be where Verizon would give you a static IP address. Now it's a dynamic IP address. And how do they keep track of that? Because they do change that dynamic IP address periodically.
It has nothing to do with the address. It has to do with the UID.
Well, where did they get that from?
I don't know the technology. Maybe David can tell you the technology, but
the
everybody who logs in gets...
No, not the MAC address. Because, now, the thing is, I also use a different equipment to get in.
Essentially, Hank, I think David may be right. I think it might be assigned via a MAC address. But I don't know the technology, so I'm not going to put in my 2 cents worth there. I'll let the two of you...
I VPN everything. I VPN absolutely everything.
Yeah, but you're still leaving a footprint.
VPN doesn't help you.
You still leave a footprint.
Data, you're leaving a footprint.
Right.
Always
yeah.
digital.
Yeah. Let me give it to you that if you, for example, are logged into going to an LGPG site regularly every day, then somebody is going to know that you have an inordinate interest in LGPG business. That can be used for you or against you. Somebody like Hank does a certain amount of research on a given subject. People now know that he's doing research on that subject. It's not good when you don't trust anybody. But when Louis Freeh was the head of the FBI, what was that, about 4 or 5 years ago?
Yeah, he scared me.
He didn't scare me.
Now, wait a minute.
He sit up and take notice because somebody like David said to him, well, what do you do on your computer on the Internet? And he said, nothing that's of any value to me or anybody else.
You know,
They said, well, what does that mean? Do you buy things? No. Do you bank? No. Do you use credit cards? No. Do you do research? No. Do you do email? No. What do you use it for? He said, nothing of its any value to me or anybody else.
He's a unique person.
Yeah.
He's not general
public.
No,
I don't shop, bank, use credit cards. I do email, but all the email I do is very light stuff. If you, I actually, and I shouldn't even do this, but I trust voice communications more than I trust email.
Hey, David, I have a question for you, okay?
Yeah.
This is like really an old story, but... it seems like the media is just playing it up now real big. And I figure you're the guy that could say, yeah, I know about it, but here's what you should do, okay?
Flashlight apps?
Yes.
Okay.
Why don't you tell the people what it is first?
Ooh.
Okay, there is a story that there's a particular flashlight app that's really a Trojan.
And the
there's
name of it is?
There's a story that almost every flashlight app in the Android world is a Trojan. Almost all of them. Okay, so if you have a flashlight app, you're running a Trojan. Darn near.
Wait, on Android.
But tell the people what it's going to do.
And none of them on iOS.
Tell the people what it does, what it reports.
A flashlight, yeah, well, it records your contact list, your email password, your credit card, your everything. It takes everything that's on your phone. Everything that your phone knows, it knows.
What's the fix?
Actually, if you do a little bit of research, which I assume that David does do, you'll find that there are four or five in the Android, I think they now call it the Google Play Library or Google Play Store. There are four or five or six different flashlight apps, one of which is a very well-known, famous Trojan, two of which are have some rather peculiar needs, which would lead you to believe they're Trojans. The thing to do, and not just with the flashlight app, I use one, incidentally, so on this one I'm particularly personally familiar with it, the problem, is when you go to install a Android program from the Google Play Store, it asks you for certain permissions. It generally asks you for more permissions than it really needs because the programmers have figured out that it's just easier to ask for more because a lot of things are tied together, and if they only wanted to use part of them, they'd have to do more sophisticated programming. But if you, for example, and this is a very real example that I came across last week, if you want a sophisticated notepad, by that I mean it has more availability to it than simply taking a basic handwritten note or a basic type keyboarded note. Let's say you want the ability to forward that note automatically. You may want to be able to store it in Dropbox. It needs several other things. Then when you go to install that program or that app, it will ask you for certain permissions. It might ask you for the ability to read and write to external media. It might ask you for the permission to access email or the telephone or the...
Okay, I'm gonna jump in. It goes way beyond that. The list of flashlight apps that are Trojanized are Super Bright LED Flashlight, Brightest Flashlight Free, Tiny Flashlight Plus LED Flashlight, Brightest LED Flashlight, Color Flashlight, High Powered Flashlight, Flashlight HD LED, Flashlight LED Torchlight are all Trojanized. The two worst, which are Super Bright and High Powered Flashlight, are not only Trojanized with permission in the way that Joe is describing, but also have backdoors through which they can install and escalate arbitrary code on your mobile phone.
The point is, one of the requirements of Play, Google Play, is that you put down what permissions you need, and that they don't have to put down that we're going to do malware through these permissions. They don't have to say we found a way of twisting the telephone permission into doing this, that, or the other thing, getting money out of you. They just have to ask for the basic permissions. And if they don't, they will get blocked out of Play. So they ask for them. If you go ahead and use them, you're being very, very foolish. I've talked to any number of people and say, when you take something out of Google Play, do you read the permissions very carefully? And they all say yes. And I say, ask why a notepad has to be able to take a selfie picture? Why does a notepad have to have the ability to send mail out? Why does a notepad, and so on? And the answer is no. They don't stop and think about that. You don't stop and think about it. David, you just gave us a list of flashlights.
Those are incidentally the most popular flashlights on the place.
Let me ask, how do you clean it off?
You
remove it entirely from your system.
You have to pick an app.
Do you really think you can remove it entirely?
Well, actually, the people who have been pushing this story is a company called Snoopwall, and they say take your mobile phone or your tablet and take it back to factory settings.
Yeah.
So reburn it, which once or twice.
But make sure you maintain a backup of your contact list.
Well, I would start from scratch. I would change all of your passwords, nuke your thing, and start your contact list from scratch. I would.
I've had to do this thing a couple of times
in my life. This is why you lose my email from time to time, is I've had to nuke my entire world of contacts several times.
When David says he's going to nuke his contacts, he's talking about having to sit down the following weekend and manually input some 700 or 800 names, addresses, phone numbers.
2,500.
No,
yeah.
No. You don't have to manually do it. You can, like, say with some of the providers, you can say, look, because I've done it with Verizon, I would say, like, I want a new phone. They say, oh, and all right, well, give me your phone, and then they just move everything over.
You're not listening to David. He's saying that if you're using one of these Trojans, your data is so contaminated that you're crazy if you just copy it. You're copying the problems. That's what David is really saying.
That is what I'm saying.
Now, I use a program that Verizon provides me with called Backup Plus.
Verizon that we were just explaining why we can't trust them 5 minutes ago.
Exactly. So what I'm saying is if I find a corruption on my phone, do you think I'm going to trust Verizon's backup program to filter out the corruptions? When I say corruption, I don't mean, you know, I can't read Hank's name. I mean that when I try to read Hank's name, I'm really sending out my passwords. This is a very, you know, this is why I have not only locks on my front door and on my back door, but on every window. There are people who want to get in and get me.
By the way, I have 3 locks on the door, and only 2 out of 3 is ever locked.
Thanks for telling me.
Didn't you at one time...
You know what Stevie just said? I told him that I have 3 locks on the door, and only 2 out of 3 is ever locked, so that when he tries to unlock it, he ends up locking up one of them.
No, not really, because...
This sounds like the beginning of a Lenny Bruce routine to me.
No, but also it's a question of going clockwise or counterclockwise on your front door. Now, I have a friend...
But since this is Halloween, we'll say Diacil and Wittershins instead.
Listen, let me stop everyone by saying this is WBAI 99.5 FM, and we are fundraising.
I forgot, we need your
support.
Yeah.
What number would they call?
212-209-2950. Let me repeat that again.
Okay.
If you are interested in helping the station out of love, you want to give some money, just outright donation,
like
no matter how big or how small it is, but in the spirit of a true donation. And, you know, a donation means you expect nothing in return, except that what you do get in return is good content. It's 212-209-2950. If you're interested in the Windows XP support that has all those post-SP3 patches up through the end of August, it's a $50 donation for the DVD.
Hank, I found out that there's an SP4.
That's the one that Microsoft acknowledges exists, but they're not saying they're releasing.
Did you release it?
It's on the disk, they don't object. And you know, if they don't object, first of all, they can't object because these are patches they release. So it's nothing more than the collection of all the patches that they released. Now, let me also say that these patches are network patches. And by network patches, I mean it's a whole collection, whether you need it or not. It's not sometimes people, when they download patches, they only need some of the patches, so you only get some of them. But network means it's all there, and then it goes through your system. On a Windows update, it says you need the following, then you apply it. We also happen to have the Windows 7 support DVD. The Windows 7 support DVD has the virtualization software. If you don't have hardware virtualization, Microsoft took that off. It also has Windows XPM. By the way, the beauty of this XPM, it's XP Professional free. Can you imagine? Microsoft was giving out Windows Professional Virtual Operating System free license, but you have to have the virtual PC software to use it, which you can still download. But you need the virtualization. If you don't have the hardware, it's in here, okay? So now if you want the XP support and the Windows 7 support DVDs, combo, 2-for-1, the Windows 2-for-1 is $75 donation. And we also have one other donation that is generic, and in a way, it's the spirit, and it's called the Buddy System. Joe, you want to tell them what the Buddy System is?
Yeah, I will be happy to tell you what the Buddy System is, because the Buddy System is a way of you folks out there making a small pledge, but making it every month for a full year.
$10 a month is not a big deal.
For some people, if I said, I'd like you to donate $100 to the station, you'd stop listening to me because, you know, that's a significant bite of your monthly income. But $10 a month, you know, that's a pack of cigarettes. Can you believe that, Hank? It's a pack of cigarettes.
Another couple of years, it'll be a tank of gas.
I remember when I was a kid smoking, it was 17 cents a pack.
Cigarettes are $13, $14 a pack.
17
now.
Cents a pack, and we got a book of matches with it.
You got a book of matches with it, and you put 20 cents into the machine, and you got 3 cents back on the... It slid into the cellophane on the side.
I remember when I was in college, you put a quarter in, 3 pennies come out, and I hated that because the pennies, when it came clanging down, everyone came out of the dorm to bum a cigarette off of you.
Well, that was one thing, but one of Joanna's uncles was telling me that he used to hire a bunch of high school kids up in the Bronx to sit in his warehouse putting 3 cents into the side of each pack of cigarettes because he ran the machines.
Oh, okay.
And they took a knife or a razor blade, they slit the cellophane up at the top, and they slid the pennies in.
So, Joe, what is the BAI Buddy?
So the BAI Buddy is a very simple thing. You call 212-209-2950, and you say, I want to be a BAI Buddy, and I want to be a buddy to the tune of $10 a month. Or you can say $10,000 a month, but I think $10 a month is probably closer to what you can afford. And you give them your bank information or your credit card information, and every month they automatically deduct that $10 from your account or charge your account, and you become a BAI Buddy. You get a premium. I think they're giving away a tote bag or a T-shirt or something like that. You also get a card that says you're a BAI Buddy, which entitles you to discounts.
Joe, I'm going to stop you just for a moment because this is the hour many people start joining the program at 8 o'clock to hear the Personal Computer Show.
Oh, can we put on our theme music?
Sure we can.
Oh.
Stevie?
Would you like to hear the theme music?
Why don't you introduce the second half of the show?
Well, it's 8 o'clock. It's time for...
Oh, boy. Okay.
Stevie.
Oh, Hank, could you wait for me up?
Yeah, you got to give me a second to get the thing going here. Jeez.
Hey, Stevie, like, are you taking a nap over there?
I was.
Well, you can't blame him. He doesn't get paid for this.
The BAI Buddy card, you can get discounts at museums and places like of cultural interest, the zoo. Hank, I'm sure you have a list of all the things you can get.
Hey, you're talking about cultural interest. How about the Personal Computer Show, cultural interest?
But the point of the Buddy system...
Off the hook, cultural interest.
You're spending only $10 in each month, but the management of BAI can count on that cash flow month in and month out, and they can do some planning, some budgeting. It's not always the desperation of their not knowing what they're going to have next month to spend. They'll be able to figure their payrolls, their rental. Speaking of rental, have they moved yet?
No.
The antenna?
No, not yet, because...
But they still have to pay the rent at 388 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn, and they have to pay the rent up at CCNY. Month in and month out, they just have to pay the rent all the time. So your being a BAI Buddy really helps them. You're a buddy. They can count on you. You're 212-209-2950. Stevie, do we have any music there?
Man, this computer...
Hank, could you wake Stevie up?
Wait. You can't blame Stevie because he doesn't get paid.
That is not the reason. All right, it's 8:01 and 40 seconds here at WBAI New York 99.5 FM, and this is the second half of the Personal Computer Show that was on since 7 p.m. We'll be on till 9 p.m., which is our regular
By the way, time. We want to say that the time that Stevie gave is Eastern Daylight Time.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason is because out in the West Coast is a three-hour shift, and some people listen around the world, so that's why I would say, you know, on the hour, on the half hour.
Should I give Zulu time then instead?
No.
Actually, it was good that you gave me my time, because I'm going to have to be about 10 minutes late coming back from this break.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay. Joe, you know what? I let's start off this hour a little differently, okay? And Joe?
Yes?
I'm going to mention the name, and I know that once you hear the name, you're going to tell a little story because it relates to our theme song, Sue Keller.
What's the story?
Who is Sue Keller?
Who is Sue Keller? What, are you kidding me?
Yeah, you got to be kidding.
Jeez, everybody knows who Sue Keller is.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, okay, Stevie.
Back in the year 1760 or 1770-something or other, a man by the name of Johann
Strauss.
Von Hall.
Johann von Hall, right.
Wrote a rondo that right. I can't remember the name of it. But it was very popular, and I used to go into the bar and drink a stein of whatever I drank while he was playing his rondo or whatever the heck it was. And in the meantime, Sue Keller was listening to it.
And she never saw the music, never heard it before? Or she didn't have any sheet music at all?
No, she was listening to it, and she was saying to herself, it's pretty good for the 1780s, but it's kind of dated for now in the 21st century. And so she sat down at her piano.
No. It was 20th century. This was back in the 1990s.
Okay? Yeah.
She's
yeah.
that old.
In the old days.
Yeah. By the way, this was created for us back around 1989.
Man, I wasn't even
born
then.
Well, I'll tell you a little bit about that after I finish my current story.
Uh-huh.
And so Sue sat down at her piano, and Sue is very famous for her...
Ragtime
piano. She's...
She's very famous for ragtime music, by the way.
Yes, not only at concert halls, but also in saloons and whorehouses.
Oh, now, wait a minute. Let's not get that personal, huh?
No, for the piano playing. Hank, obviously you're very square. But be that as it may, she did something, created it out of listening to Johann von Hall, so she called it the Von Hall Stomp, and it's been played... I can't tell you how many thousands of times since then, and I do really want to thank Sue Keller. If you go to our website on our homepage, way down at the bottom of the page...
You can download the music.
It gives her a credit, and you can download the whole music, because you only hear, 8 or 10
You know what? I should have Michael, our webmaster, put up the different versions of it. I mean, you happen to like this singular version, but she has a... Oh, she had... You know what?
She did about 4 or 5 versions.
I have all the versions, okay?
And she, if you ever find yourselves out in Chicago, look her up, because she's out there and she's playing most of the time. She and her partner are
Howard. Howard Vigorita.
Howard Vigorita.
Yeah. And by the way, Joe, you know one of the things that the station keeps asking us, because for fear of, like, hey, we have to pay a royalty... every time we play music on the air, and you have to keep track of...
Well, actually, we own this sound, and it's ours.
Well,
if anybody else wants to play it, they have to pay us a royalty.
No. It's public domain. Okay?
No.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. The performance is copyright written.
The performance is ours.
And it's ours, okay? It is. But the music itself is public domain. Hey, Joe, one of the things that I do want to cover is backup. And, if only 13-14% of the universe of users are backing up, according to the latest survey, no matter how much we're preaching, it's like it's not getting anywhere. So you know what? Like a nag, I'm going to just keep saying you got to back up. But
keep saying it.
But someone said to me, "What do I back up?"
And then data.
Okay, Stevie, you say the data. What kind of data?
Your pictures, your letters, all your email, not the programs or the applications, all the things that you have saved.
Where do you find it?
Wherever you put it. Most people put it in My Documents.
It doesn't always go into My Documents.
No, but wherever you put your data, you better find it and save it.
I'll tell you what. Yeah. If you're running Outlook, where is it?
What if you're running Outlook to do what? What are you going to save? What do you want to save?
Suppose I have my email there.
You want to save your email? Your contact list? Your contact list is not going away. That's on the cloud.
No.
Yes.
Not necessarily if you're moving to another ISP. Stevie?
If you're moving, that's not what you're talking about backing up.
Now, what it is that normally in My Documents, that's where everything is. However, you'll find that with the Windows 8 and 8.1 operating system, it starts moving to other folders. For instance, if you want to do a snapshot or a screen save where you hit the window key or you touch the window key and you hit print screen, you get a quick instant snapshot, a JPEG, into My Pictures. If you do a scan, it goes to another place. So it's all over the place.
Yeah.
So someone said to me, okay, if you identify all the different folders, you can save all the folders, but, gee, that's a lot of work.
No, it's not. Drag the whole folder.
So, you know what? I told him, Joe, I said, why don't you just go to your user folder? In other words, in the operating system, you have a user subdirectory of all the users, and just go to your user. It's my name or owner or Joe Smith or whatever the name it is, and just save everything in there, and you'll have it.
Yeah, or just drag over your My Documents folder. Or
No. My Documents doesn't have your bookmarks.
Oh, you got to drag over your bookmarks, too.
Well, then you might as well just go over to the user ID to make sure you have everything. Now, the other thing is, and I know our the staff itself, we kind of disagree with each other, okay? I believe in file saves, not image saves. The reason is because with an image save, you have to bring it back to bring back a file, you need very similar equipment.
Hank, there are some image products that will enable you to go into it and pull out a single file.
If you happen to have the software.
Yes.
Okay. If I have a file save, I can pull it out from anywhere.
If you happen to have the software, or you have saved it as ASCII.
No, the thing is, if I save as a file, it doesn't matter whether it's ASCII or not, because if I'm running a doc file or a PowerPoint...
If you're running a file, a saver, and it encrypts the file to the degree that it...
Oh, no, I'm not encrypting. First of all...
That's why I say you have to have the software, if in any way, unless you're saving it as an ASCII file.
Now, I also believe that, the economics have changed quite a bit, where... you could get a 32 gig flash drive for about $12 now. I mean, that's how cheap it is. Now, it may not run the fastest, but you know what? Get a whole batch of them. Make it one for each day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, or make it Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Okay? And by the way, pictures don't have to be backed up every time. All you need is a one-time backup on it, or maybe two times backup. And why two times? In case there's a read error, you always have a backup of it. But
One time? What's going to happen? I mean, it is possible.
Let me tell you why I would have at least two copies, okay?
Oh, I believe in two copies.
At least two copies, because in case you have a problem with a fire, it's all gone.
I hate when that happens.
I've had a fire.
Yeah, I know.
And
that's so good.
And with pictures, now I find that pictures and audio and movies, those are the three things that takes up the greatest amount of storage.
Oh, yeah, video.
Video,
a lot.
Right.
Yeah,
especially,
more than
anything else. I don't want to embarrass Stevie, but I have this movie that he was in. he was in a movie.
I was not in that movie.
You were in a movie, right?
I was in a movie, yeah.
And he was so proud of it, he gave me the movie.
Not the movie you gave me. We're not going there.
Well, those are the three things. Now, I would make a couple of copies, but you don't have to copy that over and over again.
No.
And the best time to copy is when at the end of the day. Now, one of the other things that...
Why is the best time at the end of the day? Why can't you do it at the beginning of the day?
Oh, because you'd be waiting to get on the machine. That's why.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that that people have to be concerned with is that when you do a backup, you back up onto media, and as what someone would say... what do I do with my 8-inch floppy? What do I do with my 5 1/4-inch floppy?
Right in the garbage.
No, I got data in there.
Yeah, you do. Nobody else has 5 1/4-inch.
No, wait on. Don't say that. Wait a minute. Some people have things on a 3 1/2-inch floppy, and there's... Don't tell me they're still not around.
No, they're not around. How about
they
that?
Are.
Nobody's
they
using
are.
A 3 1/4.
Hey, Joe, what do you back up on?
3 1/4.
Other than you don't do backups.
3 1/2, right? What is it?
Actually, Hank, as you know, because I ran into trouble with it, I back up onto USB drives. I have a couple of 32-gig drives.
And they're cheap now.
And they're relatively cheap. They're, $10 to $15 each. But when they go, they go. And I called up Hank last year, and I said, my drive went, and you got to help me because I got something there I need. And he came back and said, no problem, and he sent it back to me and with, I think it was 5,000-some-hundred files that he had rescued.
Which was real, by the way, on your part.
Yeah, but how could you use them?
Well, except... No, they were usable. They were usable.
They were usable. And he even named them for me.
Yes,
file
he
one
named
was called
yeah.
one, file two was called two.
4,867.
And I had to go through them one at a time, and I finally found the file I wanted. It was 4,000 and something, which means I had examined...
Now, Joe, it wasn't that bad.
Wasn't that fun?
No, what is this? When it saw a PDF file, it says file1.pdf, file2.pdf, or file1.jpeg. The problem is that when you are recovering a file that you don't know the name, what would you name it?
All PDF files, Hank.
Well, in your case, you had a lot of PDF files.
I mean, that's what I had. I had about 4,000, 5,000 PDF files. But, that's what I was saving.
But the problem is you use the USB thumb drive.
Let me tell you what they were. They were fax files. Every one of them was a PDF.